do it justice. This is we're going to be exploring a discourse about Sedra Noyach, which is the Sedra this week, which was said Moitzi Shabbos Pashas Noyach 5740, in other words 1979. So 1979 is 30 years ago. So it was 30 years ago this Sedra. So let's just see the point where the discourse takes off. It's not a Muga discourse. It's not checked or edited by the Rebbe, by the late Rebbe, but it was taught by him, and it's in the collection of discourses for the year 5740, 1979 to 1980. So we're looking here at the text where begins on page 33, aftermath of the flood. Okay, so that's verse 15. Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lemo, and Hashem spoke to Noach, saying, Tzei min hateva, go out of the ark, ata v'ishtecha uvanecha, you, your wife, your sons, unosheva necha itach, and your sons' wives with you. Kol achaya asher itcha, all the animals which are with you, mikol basa, of every flesh, ba'of, birds, uva'behema, animals, uva'chol haremes, haromes ala aretz, and all the creepy crawling things which crawl over the earth, haitze itach, take out with you, v'shartzu va'aretz, and let them swarm on the land, ufaru v'rabu ala aretz, they will be fruitful and multiply on the land. Vayetze Noach uvanav ishto nisheva navito. So Noach, his sons, his wife, and his wife's sons came out with him. Kol achaya, kol haremes v'chol haof, kol homes al haaretz, all the animals and the crawling animals and the birds, l'mishvachoteihem, by their families, by their species, yatzu min ha-teva, they came out of the ark. Vayiven Noach mizbeach l'ashem, and Noach built an altar to God. Vayikach mikol ha-behema ha-tora, he took from each of the pure animals, mikol ha-of ha-tora, and from each of the pure birds, vaya'al olot b'mizbeach, and he offered burnt offerings on the altar. Vayarach Hashem et reach hanichoach, so to speak, Hashem smelt, so to speak, the appeasing fragrance, he translates it, the nice, the fine fragrance. Vayomer Hashem al libo, and Hashem said to himself, Lo sif lekalel od et ha'adama ba'avu ha'adam, I will not again curse the ground because of man, on account of man. Ki yetze leva adam ra min urav, because the will, the desire of the heart of man is bad from his birth. Ve'lo sif od lahakot et kol chay asher asiti, and I won't again smite all the living things which I've made. Od kol yemei ha'aretz, for the rest of the days of the earth, zera v'katzir, v'kor v'chom, v'kayitz v'cholef. These are really seasons. The spring, the harvest, the sowing season, the harvest season, the cold season, the heat, the summer, the winter, v'yom v'layla, day and night. Lo yishbatu, lo yishbotu, they will not cease. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Hello. Come in. Shalom. So there we have, we're just at the beginning.
Thank you.
So we've just read a few verses, a few psukim from this text from the Chumash, and it tells us about Noach, that after the flood, God makes a promise that there will not be, basically there will not be another flood. In other words, it's a promise to sustain the world. And the promise to sustain the world the promise to sustain the world comes subsequent to Noah offering up this offering. Because when Noah came out of the Teva, when Noah came out of the Ark, he offered offerings to God, and one of the explanations about this is that earlier on in the Parsha, in the Sedra, he was told to take two of each animal, but of some animals, seven. And the seven are of the pure animals, the kosher animals. So of the kosher animals, there were seven of each, and of the non-kosher animals, there were two of each. And the way that it's understood by the sages, as it says over here, that he then offered up an animal from every kind of pure animal. So in other words, maybe it was the seventh, it was the odd one out, is there in order to be offered as an offering at the end of the flood, when the ark has come to rest and he's come out of the ark and all the animals and birds have come out, but he has offered these offerings to God. So in other words, there's the offerings to God, which are called reach nichoach, a pleasing savor from a fragrance. It's very anthropomorphic. And probably the Rambam in Moreh Nebuchim, Maimonides in Guide for the Perplexed, talks about this, where he goes through all the anthropomorphic terms used about God in the first section, so he probably addresses this as well. But this idea that the offering has a pleasing fragrance, which then produces the fact that God makes a promise that nature will continue, in effect. That nature will continue, that it will not be disrupted again by something like the flood. Because what the flood is, in a way, it's total disruption of nature. It came, the way it's described in the Torah, is begins off naturally as, intense rain, but then it becomes more and more and more, and the waters cover the whole earth, and they rise above the highest mountain. It's nature gone wild, and the way the sages speak about it is that even the constellations of stars didn't behave in the normal way. So everything was completely disoriented. And so here, there's the promise that nature will continue based on the sweet savor from the offering brought by Noah. Now, the discourse is going to explore this idea, and let's hope that we can make some, that we can cover a few of the points. It's actually quite a long discourse. We may skip from place to place. It's got a very, it's a very profound discourse, and would merit, taking 3 weeks to study, but we're just going to look at it very superficially, but nonetheless, it's something very beautiful. Vayarach Hashem et Reach HaNichoach, God smelt, so to speak, the fragrant savor. Vayom, and he said, Lo, sif od, lo, I won't again smite the world with a flood. And all the seasons, lo yishvotu, they will not cease. Ula'achazem mamshech, and then he goes on to say, Va'ani hinini mekim et briti, I will make my covenant with Noach. Ve'itah b'midrash. Now we learn in the Midrash the following idea about this sweet savor, this pleasant fragrance that God is smelling. Vayarach Hashem et reach hanichoach. God, so to speak, smelt this sweet, this pleasant fragrance. Heriach lecho shel Avraham Avinu. He smelt the scent of Abraham, Avraham. Ole mikivshon ha'esh. When he came out of the furnace. Avram was a rebel against society because in his time people were serving idols, and Avram realized that there is one God and that it's wrong to serve idols. And on account of this, his father got very annoyed with him and told Nimrod that my son is extremely difficult. He doesn't want to serve idols like everyone else. He's not normal. He's a rebel. And on account of this, Nimrod threw him into a fire, into a furnace, and miraculously he was saved. And Avraham, when he was told that he's going to be thrown into the fire, he accepted it. That he didn't say I'm not going to talk about monotheism anymore. He was willing to run that risk of what might even be certain death. And then the Midrash goes on. What was the sweet fragrance? Reach shel Hananiah, Mishael, v'Azariah. These are three people in the time of Daniel. Olin mikivshan ha'esh, and in their case too, they were also thrown into a fire. And in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and they were thrown into a fire because of their dedication to Judaism, and they were saved miraculously. It says there in the book of Daniel, the fire was so strong that the people who threw them into the fire, the servants who threw them into the fire, were themselves overcome by the flames and died, but they survived in the flames. Now, Avraham and Hananiah, Mishael, v'Azariah survived miraculously. Miracles happened for them, and they survived. And then the Midrash goes on, and it says, what was the sweet fragrance? Doro shel Shmat, the generation of persecution. Now, what exactly the Midrash means by generation of persecution, we would assume it's the time of the Roman persecution, the Hadrianic persecution, and people didn't survive. They were killed, they were burnt, Rabbi Akiva was tortured to death, many, many great sages and many other people died in this Doro shel Shmat, this generation of tremendous persecution. Now that's what the Midrash is talking about. It's Bereshit Rabbah, which is talking about an early period of our history. But the Rebbe, in this discourse, takes this idea of Shmad, the generation of Shmad, as applying to all the terrible epochs of our history, clearly including the Holocaust, times when people died because they were Jewish. And so what the Midrash is saying is that this was the savor. This was the fragrance. V'hainu d'bahakorbanot shehikhiv Noach, in the offerings which Noach brought, heriach bahem, Gam reyach hamasirat nefesh. God, so to speak, could smell, could detect the scent of the dedication, the self-sacrifice of Avraham Avinu, v'hamasirat nefesh lechananya mishal v'azaria b'mei Nebuchadnezzar, and their self-sacrifice at that time, v'hamasirat nefesh didoro shoshmad, and the self-sacrifice of the generation of persecution. Umasik b'midrash, and it continues in the midrash, hado dechtiv, that's what it says in a verse, ze dor dorshav mavakshe fanecha yakam selo. The idea that those people who seek God with such tremendous, tremendous dedication, they are the ones seeking, so to speak, the pnimiyut, panecha, the inwardness of God, and that is to be Yaakov Sela, and Sela indicates eternity. And so there is some kind of bond with the divine which emerges from this self-sacrifice. Okay, so I've gone quickly through two or three of the lines. And so there is this tremendous power of self-sacrifice. Now, this theme of self-sacrifice in Jewish thought, and particularly in the Kabbalah and in Hasidic thought, is very fascinating to me personally, and my PhD, the doctorate I wrote, was about the theme of self-sacrifice in early Chabad teachings in Hasidism and early Chabad teaching, and it's a very, very powerful image. And so what is being stated here is that the concept of self-sacrifice is something, what he's leaning to, is something which brings out a certain bond with God which has got an eternal dimension, and it's going to move towards the idea that through that the laws of nature, the dependability of existence, in a sense relates to this inner dedication of the Jewish people. And the kind of self-sacrifice that the discourse moves on to explore is not so much, although the image of suffering and of death is there very strongly, but it then moves on to a different kind of self-sacrifice, to be joyful despite adversity. And the adversity might be in a very comfortable situation, or it might be in something in a situation which is extremely frustrating and difficult to bear. There's the adversity of really physically facing death, persecution, torture of different kinds, the horrors that unfortunately exist in the world. Or it could be, in terms of ordinary daily life, just the simple upsets and difficulties and perplexities that people come to face. And the idea of facing them with simcha, with joy. Yeah. And that challenge, that challenge is the reyach hanichoach, that causes the fragrant scent which brings about a hamshacha, a flow from Ein Sof. If I can, there are two images. So on the one hand we have Ein Sof, let's write it in English. Oh, Ein Sof. And the flow from Ein Sof, first of all we have the realm of the sphere all over here. And then we have nature. We have existence, nature. It's when the flow comes from the inwardness of Ein Sof, that is when it flows into nature in such a way that nature is stable. That's what it's describing here. It's a very intriguing concept. And the way that that happens is through the self-sacrifice, or it might be the joy, that version of self-sacrifice, the strength, the steadiness of the person. And that, in a way, it's like the strength of the person facing adversity, which reaches the inwardness of Ein Sof. And as a result, there is a flow down from Ein Sof, making nature exist in a dependable way, in a firm way. And it reaches the inwardness of nature, and then that spreads to the outer dimension of nature. And so that is basically the image that is here in this discourse, which is there, and he expresses it. But this is the background to the whole discourse. Now then it goes on, v'yesh lo hosif, so we're looking nearly halfway down, the word v'yesh at the end of the line, v'yesh lo hosif b'zeh. Oh, sorry, there was something else I wanted to try to explain. In the Sfirot, there are two ways in which there are self-contradictions within the Sfirot. One is that a Sfira, by definition, as explained in basic Kabbalistic texts, whether it's Rav Moshe Kodavero or Rav Yitzhak Luria, a Sfira is a combination of radiance and vessel. Radiance is a divine illumination, and the vessel is somehow something which contains and holds the radiance. Now, although it says that the vessel comes from hit avut ha'or, a thickening of the radiance, in a sense it's still something contrary. And the name yudke vavke is generally applied to the radiance which is within the sphira, and the shell, the keli, the vessel of the sphira, they have different names. For example, the name Aleph Lamed relates to the attribute of kindness, and Elohim to severity, and so on. Except that in the Sfira Tiferet, there's one Sfira which is in the middle of the Sfira, which is Tiferet, and that has got both the name Yudke Vavke for the vessel, and the name Yudke Vavke for the Sfira inside, for the radiance inside. So it's at that point that two opposites are being joined together. The radiance and the vessel both have the same name, and that expresses radiance and vessel being bonded together, even though in essentially they are opposite. That quality of bonding together opposites is also seen by Tiferet, because Tiferet is in between Chesed and Gvura, kindness and severity. So kindness and severity are also opposites, but Tiferet joins them. So what he is speaking about, so we have here severity and kindness, and these are also joined by Tiferet. So there is a stance, there is a position, a point of balance, where these opposites are united together. And it's by the fact that the individual, maybe the people as a whole, are able to embody this stance, that they are able to have this joy in the face of adversity, and which might be self-sacrifice, or in real times of terrible persecution, or it might be what is called Kabbalat Ol, Kabbalat Ol means the acceptance of the yoke, which means a dedication to Jewish teaching and Jewish values, even in a situation where everything is stacked against that. Now, it might not be a situation where someone is pointing a gun. I remember once the Rebbe had, at that time, it was in the 1970s, he had begun the Mezuzah campaign, Mifza Mezuzah. And he was campaigning that people should be encouraged to have kosher mezuzah and to have the mezuzot on their doors checked. If they had a mezuzah, it should be checked. In fact, it turned out that very, very large numbers of mezuzot that people did have, that people wanted mezuzot, in fact, they weren't kosher. They'd gone to Israel, bought a mezuzah, and unfortunately what they bought was printed on paper and not kasher at all in many, many cases. And even when this wasn't the case, there were other ways in which the mezuzot were not as good as they should be. And of course, there were some people who didn't have mezuzot at all. So at that time, a famous pianist was living in London. And somehow or other, I went round to see him with a friend of mine, a rabbi, Rabbi Lou, and we went to visit this pianist and we talked together. His name was up in the undergrounds, I picked posters, and a Jewish pianist. And we began talking about Judaism and about his music, and this and that and the other. And finally we got round to a mezuzah, because what I wanted to try and get him to do was to agree to have a mezuzah. And we came to the subject of the mezuzah. He was extremely forthcoming about, you know, the way in which he approached a piece of music and the thoughts about it, the way he would study. He would study the historical context of pieces of music. And then we came to the mezuzah. He said, no, I couldn't have a mezuzah because no one else in the music world has a mezuzah, so I wouldn't be able to do that. And this was so striking. You know, he was a very famous, wealthy man, but just absolutely, he couldn't do that, because if he had a mezuzah, how would other people look at him in the music world? Maybe now, over 30 years later, things would be different. But at that point, he could not imagine having a mezuzah. It was very instructive, the way that people can be trapped by the social images around them. And so that Kabbalat Ol, I need to have a mezuzah. So, the mezuzah will break through the mountain, as it were. The person is convinced they need a mezuzah because the Torah says I should have a mezuzah. So what is the problem? You're worried about what this one will think, what that one will think. Don't worry. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, a new art gallery opened in London, and I had the very great pleasure of going from room to room with the person who owns the art gallery, putting up a mezuzah on every on every door, showing extremely, cutting edge, emergent art, but with a mezuzah on every door. And so you can break through those limitations. And so it's our power to combine opposites in that way which reaches to the inwardness of Ein Sof, and from that comes the flow which makes the steadiness of nature. Because what we see in the time of the flood was that nature became unsteady simply because there was something wrong with the way that people were behaving, And so therefore existence began shuddering, because there wasn't this transaction was not taking place. So that this transaction was interrupted due to the behavior of people, and that led to the fragility and disturbance of nature, which is there as the flood. So then we come to Vayeshlo Sifuza. One can add to this a third of the way down. Al pi ha-yidua, as is known, she Yaakov hu yud ekev. The name Yaakov means Jacob, the Jewish people, and that is the letter Yud, which is the first letter of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. And then we have the word Ekev. The word Ekev, which is the heel. And so the heel is the lowest part of the body, and the Yud is the highest part of the divine name. So the Yud goes right down to the heel, right down to the lowest level. And so it is that power to draw down. That's like drawing down through the dedication of the individual to God, draws down a quality from Yud right down to the heel, right down into existence to the lowest level. Okay, I think we should go on now to the this course compares the different levels of self-sacrifice. The self-sacrifice of the time of Abraham is one thing, of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah is in a certain way worse. There had been, Abraham lived before the giving of the Torah, there had then been the coming into the land of Israel and building the temple and everything, and then suddenly everything's destroyed and there they are in Galut and thrown into the furnace. And then there's the Doros of Shmad, and the generation of Shmad, a generation of persecution, is even worse. From generation to generation, different levels, things which if we look on page 300, va'ad shemizman lezman, till from time to time, yeshnam uraot ka'ele, there are events of such a kind, she'ein alem shum biyu ve'hezber klal, which have no explanation whatsoever, mikol tzadupina, from any side. And nonetheless, despite all that concealment, nonetheless, this is a generation which is bonded to God in a very deep way and bringing about this revelation. Now, Torah is something eternal. And you look, for example, at a Midrash, in Midrash Rabbah. So it was taught maybe 1800 years ago, whatever it was, by great sages. But sometimes at a particular moment, that Midrash was responding to a particular situation that happened at that moment. A rabbi is teaching a community and there's something or other that happened at that moment. In 1979, Parshat Noach, what happened was that there was a Jew who had spent many years in Russia, in Soviet Russia, and he had managed with very, very great self-sacrifice to keep Judaism despite the whole communist regime and everything. And something like 1969 or 1970, he'd managed to get out of Russia and he was now living in New York. He was living in Crown Heights near 770, and just the time just before this discourse was said, he had been walking in the street, going to shul, and someone came up for absolutely no reason, pulled out a gun, and shot him. And unfortunately, it was a variety of anti-Semitism that sometimes surfaced in New York, on various occasions, and he died. And so there's a sense in which this discourse is also a nechama, a consolation to his wife, his children. I was talking to a friend of mine, he knows his grandson. So while the discourse is presenting a structure which considers Jewish history as a whole and so on, it also has relevance to a particular event. It's sparked off, as it were, as a cue, that particular event. So therefore, it's looking at the idea of darkness and of negativity and of self-sacrifice and of someone dying simply because they're a Jew, and the power that there is in this. Okay, so now let's take the next just one second. Okay, in the next paragraph for Inyan Zeh, it goes from the month of Elul through the festivals and the way in which we are seeking to connect with God through the month of Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and then finally we come to the whole idea of Simchat Torah and the rejoicing with the Torah, which is not even written. The idea of Simchat Torah and the hakafot that are carried out with the Torah scrolls, the dancing with the Torah scrolls, which is something very, very deeply ingrained in the lives of the Jewish people. It's not written in the Torah, and it's not in the Mishnah, and it's not even in the Gemara. It is a minhag, it's a custom. And there is a Hasidic idea that the greater the spirituality that there is in something, the less it's actually going to be written, the more it's going to be something oral. So it's not even able to have been written in the oral Torah. And that indicates not its secondary nature, but its primary nature, the way that it's something very, very profound. And through that joy, even though it's in a darkness, so there is this whole atmosphere of joy. And if we look at the two lines at the bottom of the page, when after all this joy of the festival and of Simchat Torah, yesh adayin choshech hagalut, there is still the darkness of exile, v'ad l'choshech kaful m'chupal v'ad l'meuraot, until it's a double and redoubled darkness, including such events, bishluchei mitzvah, with people who are about to perform a mitzvah. This man was, this is like a specific reference to that particular event. The man was going to the synagogue at that moment and being killed at that moment in a peaceful time. The discourse includes the idea of periods of suffering when there's horrific tragedy taking place on every side. But here it's something, as it were, in an exceptional situation. For afapichin, and nonetheless, la'achalei kol ha'lamot v'esterim, despite all these concealments, kol Yisrael omdim chazak al mamadam, the whole Jewish people stand firm on their position. But often the Sela, in a way of Yaakov Sela, as we mentioned, the way of eternity, l'mayla mishinuyim, higher than changes, and this is something which has got the quality of the prophecy of Moshe. It describes it in intense terms. Now, if we move to the next paragraph, v'al pi kol zeh, Tugdal, according to this, Tugdal hatmiya, we can be particularly surprised. Masha chisat brit, the Noach, the fact that the making of the covenant with Noach, haitadav kamitzad zeh, was particularly because of this, shevayarach Hashem reich avodah, that God smelled the fragrance of this service of Mesirat Nefesh, till the Mesirat Nefesh of the generation of persecution. Now, this Krisat Brit, this making of a Krisat Brit, this making of a covenant with Noach, what was it about? So the third line of that paragraph, Haita al kiyum ha'olam. It was about the existence of the world, nature, that the world should exist. Bchinat chitzoniyut ha'olamot, the external aspect of the worlds. So then, missing out the brackets, why did there have to be this connection of Mesirat Nefesh to the idea of the covenant, which establishes and guarantees, as it were, that nature will continue? And so here he's moving in to explain what we've already got in our diagram, the Ha'inyan, who it's explained as follows. Al-Pi Amavur Be'inyan Vayitzkor Lekim Et Noach. Now, as we see with the idea of God remembering Noach, Shezikaron Zeh, this remembrance, Haya Mitzad Ha'ava Pnimit Va'atzmit, was because of a deep, inward, and essential love. And so that quality of love is something which, now, this is a point where two opposites are being joined, or something negative is being transformed into something positive. That's the interesting thing about love. Al kol pshayim techase ahava. Love covers all sins and will transform something which is negative into something positive. As it says here in the brackets, we can connect this with what Rashi says on these words, God remembered Noach. When it says Vayizkor Elokim, the shame God remembered, using the word Elokim, Shem Elokim u'midat hadin, the name Elokim is the attribute of severity. And so what does it mean, the attribute of severity, gvura, severity, remembers Noach? That means that it's changed from severity to rachamim, to mercy. And this rachamim, this mercy that the severity is transformed into, is higher than ordinary mercy. And so this is something which is very exalted, that and it comes from this deep inward love. V'zeo gam ma shebepasuk v'yizkor lekim et Noach. And these are also one of the verses that we say in the Musaf, in the prayers of Rosh Hashanah in the afternoon, the long Musaf prayer, where we say 10 verses about remembering God's kingship, and 10 verses about God remembering, and 10 verses about the Shofar. And one of the verses is about God remembering Noach. And that idea is to express this concept and draw this from the highest level. That's what's happening on Rosh Hashanah, that it's drawn from the highest level, coming down into the lowest. And now on page 302, Va'al Yedei Zeh Na'ase Shinui Ikari, through this comes about a fundamental change, Gam B'Chitzoniyut Ha'Olamot, also in the external aspect of the world. So there we have that, we have this concept of the firmness of nature coming about because of this dedication and this firmness of the Jew reaching towards Ein Sof, and that flows back into the world. Now, next paragraph. V'zeh mashak chitzat brit de Noach. This is why the making of the covenant with Noach, between Noach and God, ba al yedei v'yarach Hashem et reich hanichor, came through this idea of God spending that fragrance, shukai lo rak al reich hakorbanot, which doesn't only mean the offerings as literally in the text, elegam reich shel avodat mitzirat nefesh, but also the concept of self-sacrifice, until the full concept. Because since the idea that the different seasons will not cease, in other words, nature will continue ceaselessly, Humitzad gilui koach ein sof. It's because of a revealing of the power of the infinite, ein sof. Va'ad la mitat ha'inyan de ein sof, shemitzad ha'atzmut. Until you come to the very essence of the infinite. V'lechein utzach la'alech de mesirat nefesh tafka. That's why there had to be this quality of self-sacrifice. The av shegam avodat hakorbanot. Even though the service of the korbanot itself, bringing offerings in the temple, in a way is similar to korbanot, as it says that when someone brings an offering, he should think to himself, the same way that this offering is being slaughtered and put on the altar, the same thing should be done to me. That's what Ramban, for example, writes about. That's what a person thinks when they're bringing a korban in the temple. Because God, in his great mercy, he takes a tmura, he's taking something instead of me, so he's taking the animal on the altar. But nonetheless, the real quality of reaching to the Ein Sof is even higher than the korbanot, even though it says in the Zohar, v'av shegam b'korbanot, even the last two lines, it says, Amru, they say, in 41, it gives the, note 41, it gives the reference to two places in the Zohar where it speaks about this. I think it might mention it a few times. Raza de Korbana, or Lead Raza de Ein Sof. The secret of the Korban reaches to the secret of Ein Sof. So, you see the word korban, in English we use the word sacrifice. But korban actually comes from the word which means drawing near. So bringing an offering on the altar is a way of drawing near to God, and that drawing near reaches to the very secret of the infinite. And that means a certain level of the infinite, and he describes it, the infinite which can be recognized, which can be described in some way. Where you could say that there is this aspect and that aspect, and then if we go on to the next page, he says, "Avol bichdei lamshich me'ein sof she'ein shaych b'rosh v'sof klal," to reach the very inwardness of ein sof beyond the difference between head and foot, and especially the atzmut, the essence, amitit ein sof. For that, there has to be. It's not enough to have the korbanot. Now that's a very striking thing, and this is an image which we have in the Midrash as well, that the service in the temple was not enough. In the time of the temple, it was not enough to reach the real essence. And it's the service that came during the time of exile and during the time of persecution, that is something which reaches even higher. It's a rather shocking statement, because it includes the idea that it says Moshe Rabbeinu was the humblest of all men. Why was he so humble? So one of the explanations is that he could see ahead of him Doro Shel Shmat, that's what the Midrash said. He can see the generation of persecution. And he sees that they are facing the most horrific things and suffering and dying and being killed, being tortured to death and dying. And yet they are holding on to Jewish teaching, and this is something incredible. And so it's in relation to that, says the Midrash, that Moshe felt very humble. And it's that which reaches to Ein Sof, and that is, and the quality of Ein Sof is Ani Hashem Lo Sheniti. I am God, I do not change. In other words, something absolutely eternal and unchanging. And what's striking over here is that the idea that that is brought down, that unchanging quality. God is unchanging, and the unchanging quality comes down to nature as well, that nature should be unchanging. In other words, nature should not fragment into the chaos of the flood or other varieties of chaos, but it should be something that we can rely on and in a healthy way. So that is the first major part of this discourse, setting up this structure. And then it's going to be applied to a number of different aspects of Jewish life. Now, the first one is connecting this concept to the idea of joy in general. V'inyan zeh shaych l'chodesh Tishri. This concept applies to the month of Tishri. missing out the brackets, that through al yedei ahachlatot tovot shebechodesh Tishri, through the good decisions, you see, we're supposed to make good decisions in the month of Tishri, that we're going to do good things and try and keep to them through the year. Through those good decisions, la'avodat Hashem, to serve God with learning Torah, keeping mitzvot betokef, with a strength, as kein zach vetim nitken in riren, that nothing will make us budge from that. There are all kinds of situations, like the mezuzah and the pianist, where a person might think that, well, if I cut this corner or that corner, then I'll be more likely to succeed in some way. But the question is a scale of values, and with the help of Hashem, to be able to stand strong. Especially the time of our joy, and even more so the time of Simchat Torah, we bring down the power to serve God with joy throughout the year. So now the focus is moving from self-sacrifice, suffering, to joy. And that even though this simcha, when keeping a mitzvah, is a great avodah, so that's a very true thing. Even so, page 304, every person is commanded to be joyful when we do a mitzvah. But it's not only when doing mitzvot, which themselves are joyful, like a mitzvah of Simchat Torah, where it actually says in the Torah that we should be joyful, but doing any mitzvah. As the Rambam ends off when he's talking about the idea of doing mitzvot in general, and he cites the story of King David. King David was dancing and singing very wildly, page 304, half, three quarters of the way down the first paragraph. And there was King David who was dancing with this tremendous joy. That kind of joyfulness should be there. She'eino mitpa'el, that's five lines from the bottom of that paragraph, the first paragraph, page 304. Eino mitpa'el, he is not disturbed. Mikol ha'alomot v'hastelim, from all the concealments, all the hiding. V'chol ha'alomot, and all these halem, all this concealment, einam azidim oto mimekomo, don't budge him from his spot. Ve'ovedet Hashem betokef ubesimcha gluya, and he serves God firmly and with a revealed joy. But often the sela, in a way which is above change. And through this, hinei al yedei zeh, through this, umamshich gam elamale inyan lo shaniti, he brings down the quality of permanence from above, shemitgale bezeh bekiyum v'hanhagat olam, which is then revealed in the existence and the process of nature in the world, and heimba often the lo yishpotu, in such a way that the seasons will not cease and everything will be good and firm and dependable. And the v'shal kavanah pnimit bezeh, the inner intention of this is shahateva do'olam, the nature of the world, yesaya liyisrael ba'avodatam, that will then help the Jew in his service. Now that's a very interesting way of rounding this circle, because if nature is dependable, then the individual in his and her relationship with God is something which is that much easier and is able to take place more easily. And so therefore it's a kind of cycle where the concealments and the problems help, that there should be a situation which in fact promotes positive, a positive connection with God. Now, then it speaks about, it goes back, speaking about facing the negative, and even when there are negative things, facing that, and through joy one breaks through all the different negative qualities. And the Rebbe here speaks about the nations of the world, and the way in which any kind of enemy, yehafchul mesayim, should be transformed into people that help, instead of them being people who attack and who want to kill this person. It was an anti-Semitic act which killed that particular individual, unfortunately. there in Crown Heights. But the Rebbe is saying that those people who feel enmity should be transformed into people who want to help, that they see a positive, the positive dimensions which emerge from the nature of the Jew and his and her role in the world, and instead of this being seen as something threatening and something negative and something dominating in a negative way, it should be seen as something which is inspiring and positive and wholesome. And there are many people who do see it in precisely that way, and that is really part of the whole fascination of the process of history, that it's a mixture of relationships. We then come on the next page, 305, to the idea that v'hine ha-korbanot she-hikriv Noach, we're coming back to the offerings that Noach offered, and to the idea of opposites. He offered offerings from every kind of animal, the pure animals that were in the ark. Now that quality of the ark, v'yuvan zeh, last words at the end of the third line on page 305, second paragraph, this will be understood by Hakdim HaYedua by considering the Tevat Noach hi b'chinat shalom. The Ark of Noah has the quality of peace. Shahare hayu sham kol ha-chayot, chayot v'abehimot yachad. There were wild animals and there were domestic animals all together. And that peace that was there in the Ark is b'dugmat ha-shalom de la'atid lavo. It's like the peace that will be in the world to come. Sheyeh v'gar ze'ebim kebes, when the wolf will lie with the lamb. And also this, so that idea also relates back to the month of Tishrei, when there's the Sukkah, which is also a Sukkah of peace and holding opposites within it. And then if we go down to later in this paragraph, that the idea of peace is in Yana Shalom Uchibu Beit Hafechim. Peace means the joining of two opposites. And also the Mesirat Nefesh, the self-sacrifice of the generation of persecution, is also joining the two opposites. Because the concealments that there are in the time of this, the concealments of persecutions and terrible events which have no explanation, they are things which are the opposite of holiness. And nonetheless, Mahapchim Otam Liktucha, they can be transformed into holiness. Lo rak sho einam monim oto chas v'shalom ba'abodat Hashem. Not only don't they prevent the person from serving God, but on the contrary, that through this hu mosif omet ba'abodato ba'ofen de mesirat nefesh. He increases effort in his service, and in a way of mesirat nefesh, in such a way that he doesn't actually, it isn't actually, it's a potential Mesirat Nefesh. He is able to be so dedicated to God that it's considered as if he actually gave his life to God. But instead of that, he keeps the commands, Ivdu et Hashem b'simcha, serve God with joy. So in other words, he's serving God with joy, but it's as if he was burnt at the stake in self-sacrifice, because all the details of his service, learning Torah, keeping mitzvot, and everything he does, even the ordinary everyday things, are done for the sake of heaven. And in all his or her ways, everything he does or she does is knowing God at that moment. That's a tremendous quality, that every single thing the person does is a bond with God with revealed joy. And because of this, these negative things are all transformed from something negative into something radiant and positive. And then it goes into the discussion about the Sfirat Tiferet that we've already spoken about. The next paragraph on page 306 talks about the different Sfirat. It starts off that the vessel for this peace is Ahavat Yisrael, Vahavta Lerecha Kamocha, loving one's neighbors yourself, as oneself, genuinely. And that idea of this love between people, that draws down the name Yudke Vavke. And the name Yudke Vavke is in Tiferet. And in Tiferet there is the vessel, which is the name Yudke Vavke, and also the radiance is the name Yudke Vavke. So there you have in Tiferet the unity together of the vessel and the radiance, and also Tiferet joins Gvura and Chesed, severity and kindness at the same time. And so there is this concept of joining together opposites. And then he moves from the Sfirot of Atzilut, which we're talking about here, in the last third of this paragraph, that this is also within the individual. The last fifth of it. Hine al derech zeh, hu bi Yisrael. So it is with each individual. Sheyesh ba'em asara medragot, that there are 10 levels, which in the Jewish people, as described in Sefer, in Sedra Nitzavim, it talks about 10 levels, Roshechim, Shiftechim, etc., till you get Mechotev Etzercha Ad Shor Memecha. They correspond, I've never seen this before, incidentally, they correspond to the 10 upper Sfirot, from which are expressed in the people themselves, and the Inyan of Tiferet. That idea is the fact that atem nitzavim kulchem, that all the different types of individual, moroshechem shifteichem, from the highest to the lowest, they are all unified together, page 307, to be completely one. That's an astonishing concept, and this is because of the revelation of the infinite, which is above all division. So here we've got within the people are the sfirot, and the bonding of the people together with the ahava. Remember that it's ahava which enables this whole process to take place, because it's love which reaches into the negative and transforms it into the positive. And there is this deep love which bonds not just the person to God, so he's ready to dedicate himself to God, but also bonding the people together, the Jewish people together, with a bond of love between each of them. And in such a way that it draws down this radiance of Yudke Vavke. And then comes a situation, Va'al Yedei, that's five lines down on page 307, Va'al Yedei it kalalut v'it achdut b'Yisrael, through the intermingling and the unification of Am Yisrael, of the Jewish people, Shal Yedei ze nimshach v'hem b'shem Avaya, through that is drawn down in them the name Yudke Vavke. They're able to achieve whatever they want. Nothing will be kept back from them. Even when they are in a negative situation, as far as the individual is concerned, quote unquote, a sinner. Kedrashat Chazal, as the sages say, ala pasuk, Chavur Atzavim Ephraim Hanachlo. Now this is quite a striking verse in the book of Hosea, and it's saying Ephraim, that means the northern kingdom, is just a heap of bad things, forget about him. And that's the way the commentaries explain this verse in Hosea, that Ephraim, the northern kingdom, is in a terrible situation, there's no hope for them. It's a terrible thing to say, but that's how the prophet Hosea puts it. And in fact, the people of Ephraim went into exile before the people of Yehuda, and they were lost. That's the lost 10 tribes are the people of Ephraim. However, in a Hasidic discourse, somehow or other, which I didn't look up, I didn't have the moment to look it up, this verse is transformed in some way to make it into something positive, that Yotzim la milchama v'notzchim, they go out to war and they conquer. In other words, a verse which is taken to mean something negative is transformed into something positive. And what the Rebbe is saying, that even though the Jewish people include people, and many people perhaps, who are negative in all kinds of different ways, nonetheless, this can all be transformed into something positive, and especially, al achat kama v'kama, how much more so when you're talking about the time when they do keep Torah mitzvah. So even when they don't keep Torah mitzvah, somehow or other, they have this sort of miraculous connection with each other. It's a fascinating feature of the Jewish people, that even if they are far from traditional observance, nonetheless they very often have a very deep bond with each other. It's, Israel, for example, is often considered a secular country. But the sense of love and of concern in the entire country for every individual, there can be some little event in a village somewhere, suddenly everyone is taken with it, it's something which moves people in a very, very dramatic way. And indeed, over the whole world, a great sense of empathy and commitment, as if it's all one family, even if it's among people who are not keeping the obvious aspects of Torah and Mitzvah. Nonetheless, there's this bonding within them, and this is the idea. This is this power, which also is expressed in a way of joy. And everyone, even those who are in some way negative, become transformed into positive. And so through this comes the last paragraph of the discourse, which basically is a bracha, that there should be come down blessing through this whole structure, should come down blessing to the whole Jewish people. And everyone who is negative should be transformed into something positive. Any kind of adversary should become a help. And al yedei avodah letzeit maharagilat vateva shelo, through someone leaving their habits, should be v'nivruchu b'cha. This is going into next week's parsha. There should be blessed through you kol mishpuchot adama, all families of the earth, in the way that it says that of the future, that not only will people not be opposed to the Jewish people, other nations, but they will be helping them, because for the whole Jewish people there will be radiance, and through this one takes the sparks of holiness, everything that one has, and all our children and our old people, our sons, our daughters, a great community, Yeshuvu Heino, will come back to the land of Israel speedily in our days, Begula Amitit Vashlema, in the true and complete redemption through Mashiach Tzidkenu, who should come and redeem us and bring us upright to our land speedily in our days. Mamash.
Very apt.
I must say, I see this as a fascinating teaching. The way it's, it somehow, it encompasses the history of the Jewish people, the calendar, certain aspects of it, particularly at this time of year, the people as a whole, and the individual. It's
an imaginative masterpiece.
and the whole relation of the individual, the infinite, and nature, the world. That's triangulation. it's very strange.